Navigating Despair from Selected Psalms. This is an exposition of Psalm 3. This message by Pastor Rod Harris was delivered at Trinity Baptist Church on Wednesday evening, September the 26th, 2018.
We all are well aware of the power of music. Music has the power to lift us up. It has the power to encourage. It has the power to inspire. Music has a way of expressing deep longings in the human soul. Music has the ability to bypass our inability to communicate, our inability to express what's going on deep down inside. And we know that music has marched us off to war. We know that music has given us comfort and peace and encouragement in times of trouble. There is a lot to be said for music, as it music, often a song or an anthem, really dominates, and a whole movement inspires a movement and carries that movement on and helps us to remember. It was in the latter part of the turbulent 1960s the first time I heard it. It was a song that was haunting in its ability to sum up the intricacies of life. It was a simple song, and yet it spoke with great eloquence of the human struggle. And even though that was years ago, I still remember every word to that song. Powerful, moving. Gloom, despair, and agony on me. Deep, dark depression, excessive misery. If it weren't for bad luck, I'd have no luck at all. Oh, gloom, despair, and agony on me. You ever feel that way? You ever just feel like, I just want to throw in the towel. I want to roll over and die. I've just had it. But everything that could go wrong has already gone wrong. And it just seems to be piling up. It seems to get worse and worse. If you say, no, I never felt that way, then you haven't lived very long. Or you're not paying attention. Steve Brown used to say, you apparently have not lived long enough or sinned bad enough to even have an opinion on this subject. Well, if you can honestly say, I've never been despairing, I've never been overwhelmed, then I have to conclude you're either not honest or you're not paying attention. All of us have those times of depression. All of us have those times when we're just overwhelmed by all that life throws at us. Those times when our nightmare becomes our reality. What do you do when life closes in? Shakespeare said, sorrows seldom come as single soldiers. They come in battalions. And that seems to be true. Never one thing. It's always a whole mess of things that come at one time. What do you do when life's overwhelming? What do you do when you're pressed down because of all that's happened? Webster defines despair as the utter loss of hope. You just can't see any way out. You just can't see any light whatsoever. You're just crushed under this load of stuff. You ever been there? Now, some of you are saying, have I ever been there? That's my home address. I mean, that's just where I live anymore. Well, what do you do when life's like that? Well, we're going to look tonight at Psalm 3. Because being a child of God doesn't give us a pass. Trusting in the Lord, giving your heart to the Lord, even walking in obedience to the Lord does not make us immune from heartache. We don't have any assurance, Old Testament or New Testament, that we're never going to struggle. Nowhere in Scripture are we told, hey, all will be well. In fact, we're told there will be heartache, there will be trial, and there will be tribulation. Just as the people of the world suffer, we will suffer. The difference is we don't suffer alone. We have one who has promised to walk with us. We are promised, we are assured there is a way out. We are assured there is hope. He was running for his life. His own son was determined to destroy him. Those who once praised him now reviled him. Forced to flee in humility and shame, he was crossing the desert region. But somewhere in the midst of all of that, he found time to put his thoughts to music. And that's what we have in Psalm 3. Notice, we're even given a title. A Psalm of David when he fled from Absalom, his son. So it's written at a time when his son is rising up against him to overthrow his kingdom. 2 Samuel 15 and 16 would give the background historically for that. Here was a man that is described as a man after God's own heart. And this is a man in the midst of crisis, and his crisis is political, spiritual, and emotional. It's hitting him on every level. He's a king whose kingdom was in revolt. He's a father whose son tore his heart out. He was a believer who wondered where God was in all of this. Now, you may not have the same exact struggle, but you faced similar trial and trouble. Look with me, Psalm 3. O Lord, how many are my foes? Many are rising against me. Many are saying of my soul, there is no salvation for him in God. But you, O Lord, are about me, my glory and the lifter of my head. I cried aloud to the Lord, and he answered me from his holy hill. I lay down and slept. I woke again, for the Lord sustained me. I will not be afraid of many thousands of people who have set themselves against me all around. Arise, O Lord, save me, O my God, for you strike all my enemies on the cheek. You break the teeth of the wicked. Salvation belongs to the Lord. Your blessing be on your people. A powerful song as this man of God pours out his heart. Suddenly, unexpectedly, his son led a rebellion against him. And he had no recourse but to flee. He left Jerusalem, took out across the Kidron Valley, over the Mount of Olives, and into the desert for temporary safety. As we walk with him in his heartache, here's what I want us to understand. Navigating the troubled waters of despair demands an accurate assessment of your circumstance and a steadfast confidence in the greatness of God. Those are the two issues. An honest, accurate assessment of where you are, of the circumstances, for you to be honest about where things stand right now. And in the midst of that, that you look with confidence to the greatness, the glory, and the wonder of God. Three things I want us to note along the way. First, I want you to note, if you're going to overcome despair, you must deal honestly and openly with where you are. Real or perceived, you have to be honest about where you are. And by that I mean where you are spiritually, where you are emotionally, where you are physically. What is the circumstance that you find yourself in? Now, contrary to some of our charismatic friends, for you to be honest about your circumstance is not accepting defeat. It's not declaring more trouble. It's just being honest with where you are. And if you're going to get out of something, if you're going to rise above that, you're going to have to first acknowledge, this is where I am. This is the circumstance I'm in. These are the things that are happening in my life. In the opening verse, David expresses what he sees and how he feels. O Lord, how many are my foes? Many are rising up against me. Many are saying of my soul, there's no salvation for him in God. Listen to the paraphrase that Peterson gave in his paraphrase, the message. God, look, enemies past counting, enemies sprouting up like mushrooms, mobs of them all around me, roaring mockery. That's what David is saying. David's saying, there's so many, I can't even count them. They seem to be coming at me from every direction, and they're mocking me. This is a desperate man. This is a desperate man in desperate circumstances. Now, you may not be facing a military battle every morning when you wake up, but you may be battling strong forces nonetheless. It may be open warfare in your home or in your office. And the weapons may be rumors, lies, gossip, or misrepresentation. But you are fighting battles. That's the nature of life in this fallen world. We have difficulties. We have struggles in relationships. And like David, you may feel overwhelmed. You may not physically be surrounded by enemies as David was, but nevertheless, you feel surrounded. You feel overwhelmed because of all the forces that seem to be arrayed against you. It's not a vague problem or a disappointment that David's facing. It is a real battle for his life and for his kingdom. When he's running from his son, it's not just, I'm trying to get away because he's trying to take my kingdom. He's going to take the kingdom by taking his father's life. So he is dealing with a very real threat. Let me ask you though, because you may not find yourself in that circumstance. You may not be surrounded by enemies, but a simple question. How many enemies does it take to make your life miserable? One will do. And can we be honest? If that one is determined, they're never alone. They bring friends. They talk and they get others involved. So you may not be attacked by soldiers or by your own son, but maybe your son has broken your heart. Maybe he's betrayed what you stand for. Or maybe your husband or your wife or your best friend. Maybe those closest to you have joined their ranks. They're all arrayed against you, and you can even hear their chant, God will not deliver you. There's no hope for you. So that's the starting point. To recognize and honestly confess where you are, how it is you're feeling, what you're feeling, and is the best you can determine it why you're feeling that way. It's essential. If you're going to overcome despair, you've got to start with being honest about your predicament, whether it be real or perceived, whether there really are people who are actually out to do you harm, or whether you sense or you feel like people are doing that. It's important to acknowledge your fear and to be as transparent as possible before Him. But that's just the first step. Second, if you're to overcome despair, you must acknowledge the sufficiency of Christ to save. So yeah, I'm honest about where I am. I'm honest about what I'm feeling and how difficult this circumstance it is. But that's not where I stay. I have to lift my eyes from that, and I have to look to the one who has power sufficient, the one who is able to deliver. Verses 3 and 4, but you, O Lord, are a shield about me, my glory and the lifter of my head. I cried aloud to the Lord, and He answered me from His holy hill. David begins by expressing his crisis. He deals openly and honestly with his circumstances, but he doesn't stay there. He refuses to dwell there. He moves on to express his confidence in God. He moved his focus from his enemies to his deliverers. Now, when we face trial and trouble, the natural response is to just focus on all of that trouble and everything that's wrong. And if it happens to be that part of what's going on is I'm sick or there are circumstances that keep me at home where I can't get out, it's just that much worse. Because I can't do anything else, so I sit here or I lay here. When I do, my mind just keeps focusing on everything that's wrong, every trial, every trouble, every circumstance. There comes a point that we have to take our eyes off of that. We turn our focus away, not denying the trouble, but understanding there is one greater than all of our troubles. If your focus remains on your enemies, I guarantee you it will soon grow beyond any ability for you to cope with. It will grow larger and larger until it just runs you over. You will be absolutely overwhelmed. Do you remember when the children of Israel were to go into the promised land and they sent the spies into Canaan? You remember the report when they came back? 10 of them said, oh, there's no way. There are giants in the land. God said it's ours, but apparently he didn't tell them. And they don't want to leave, and they're really big, and those cities are fortified, and it's just not possible. There are only two out of that crowd that says, no, the Lord has given it to us. We can take it. Where's your focus? Is it on the trouble? Is it on your enemy? Or is it on the power and the size of your God? The majority said, we can't possibly win. The other two said, we can't possibly lose. They saw the same land, but they didn't see the same thing. David turned his thoughts toward God, and he was reminded of God's power. He is a shield about me. That is, he's a protector. He lifts up my head. What does that mean? He's an encourager. And he answers my cry. Listen to this quote from Spurgeon. We need not fear a frowning world while we rejoice in a prayer-hearing God. That's the issue. To make any difference what's going on in this world, doesn't make any difference what is arrayed against me. We have a prayer-hearing God. We have a sovereign God who spoke and the whole universe came into being, and his power is sufficient. And so the thing that we as the people of God have to keep before us and have to keep in the forefront of our mind and our thinking is God is always the majority. Whatever we're facing, however many there may be, however well equipped they may be, God is always the majority. And so we look to him and trust in him and his as our protector, as our encourager, as the one who hears our prayer. A third thing. Once you assess your circumstance and then fix your gaze upon him, you'll find genuine peace and you'll be able to give a confident cry. Verse 5 down through the rest. Look again back up at verse 1. O Lord, how many are my foes? Many are rising against me. I'm surrounded. And I like Peterson's paraphrase. They're sprouting up like mushrooms. They just keep growing. But look at what he says in verse 5. I lay down and slept. He was able to sleep in the midst of all of this trouble. Why? Because he had focused on God's provision and God's great care. David is saying, I got a good night's sleep and I face the day without fear. I will not fear the thousands that may come against me. That's the life lived in the firm hand of a sovereign God. See, this is why I keep saying that the doctrine of the sovereignty of God is not a coffee table doctrine. It's not just a cute, beautiful trinket that we like to show people. Look what I believe in. It is a practical, everyday truth. It's not to be put on a shelf and admired. It's to be used and lived out every day. I live in the confidence of a sovereign God. And so in the midst of my trial, real as it is, threatening as it is, I'm able to sleep and I'm able to rise with confidence, not because of me, but because of the power, the grace, and the glory of my God. I will not be afraid of many thousands of people who have set themselves against me all around. Look at verse 7. Arise, O Lord. Save me, O my God. For you strike all my enemies on the cheek. You break the teeth of the wicked. I wrote out beside that, charge. Because that's what he's saying. I'm surrounded by enemies. They're sprouting up all over the place. But when he took his eyes off of his trouble, off of the heartache, off of the threat, and he began to think about the glory and the power and the person of God, it changed everything. I got a good night's sleep, and now I'm ready to take on the world. Arise, O Lord, charge. Complete turnaround. Not because he did anything. Not because he was going to be able to accomplish anything. It's his trust in God. It's his confidence that God will deliver him. Salvation belongs to the Lord. Your blessing be on your people. Literally, he's saying salvation is God's business. So, the next time you feel like belting out another chorus of gloom, despair, and agony on me, why not take your eyes off of your enemies and fix your gaze upon your deliverer, your Savior? And maybe, instead of belting out another verse of the blues, you just might yell, charge. Our confidence, our hope is in the God we serve. We can rise above despair. Because as long as God is on his throne, there is always hope. And that is our hope. That is our assurance as the people of God.
You've been listening to the TBC Tulsa podcast, which features the preaching ministry of Pastor Rod Harris at Trinity Baptist Church in Tulsa, Oklahoma, located at the corner of 41st and Union. To learn more about the ministries at Trinity Baptist Church, visit us on the web at www.tbctulsa.org.